The impact of depression on Africa is that if you are depressed, you can't even function. It will be a struggle. So we should be looking at this from the point of productivity. And if one person is not productive enough in whatever capacity he or she is serving, whether you're self-employed or you are government employed or someone else employed you can't contribute your own quota to the people you're serving is a minus. So the economic impact.
This podcast came to be because I want to reignite discussions about Pan-Africanism. And the purpose is to plant seeds of unity and inspiration among Africans, both at home and in the diaspora. I believe we have come to the stage where our continent is more vulnerable than ever. And it's up to us to decide our fate moving forward. What we will come to realize, I hope, is that we're so much more alike than we're different. And this show is just a small contribution to the public discourse that is going on in Africa right now. My name is Soshima Iro, and this is the Pan-African Experience. In today's episode of the Pan-African Experience, I'll be discussing stress management with Dr. Ezinne Nnamdi-Lewis. Dr. Nnamdi-Lewis is a medical doctor at the Royal Bournemouth Hospital here in the UK. She is also a stress management expert, and she helps professionals manage their stress on a day-to-day basis. She is the creator and host of the annual Stress Summit Africa, which started in 2020 and has made positive impact across Africa. She also trains African stress management coaches through a series of online courses. I am grateful and honored to have Dr. Ezinne Nnamdi-Lewis on the podcast. Dr. Ezinne Nnamdi-Lewis, welcome to the Pan-African Experience.
Thank you.
How do you refer to your what you do, your profession?
Okay. First of all, my first love is medicine, so I'm a doctor with special interest in stress management.
Okay. I think I invited you on for this podcast to discuss stress management, and because. You know, I came from a country that I would consider the most stressful country in the entire world, you know, Nigeria. So I just wanted to talk to you about stress management, and everything related to stress. And so we'll just start by, you know, asking you, you know, what is stress? You know, what triggers it, and how does this manifest in our body?
Stress is how we respond to a huge demand or a perceived threat. So that means we feel we don't have enough resources to tackle this huge demand or something that looks like a threat, even though it's not real, whether it's just a perceived threat. And then our body starts responding in different ways, okay? Our body is actually responding for us to do something about the situation, either to fight the situation, find solution to the situation, run from the situation, or just do anything so that we can cope and return back to the resting state. Now, it becomes a problem when we respond in a negative way, or when we ignore at all, when we ignore completely. So the stress hormones continue to be elevated in our bodies, and before you know it, it starts causing so many problems, which we can now regard as the ways stress manifests. It can affect our cognitive function. So you realize that when you're stressed, it's not the best time for you to remember things. I remember one time I had an exam back in medical school. I was so tensed, so nervous. And when you were asking me questions, things that were so easy, I struggled to remember. But compared to when you're so relaxed, it's easier for you to remember. So that's one of the things, that's one of the ways stress can manifest. Again, forgetfulness. It can make you find it difficult to concentrate on things. It can affect your health, okay? It does by worsening existing medical conditions, making them so difficult to manage, like high blood pressure, diabetes, even worsening heart conditions, all right? Including stroke. Again, stress can affect our behavior. Do you want me to keep going on and on?
Yes, please, whatever information you can give us,
Okay.
that's better, yes.
Okay. So stress can affect our behavior in the sense that it can make you to be irritable. If you're so stressed, there is a way you see something that is very little. For instance, let me say I just get back home. Like I went to work, I was exposed to stress at work. Now I'm now irritable. I come back home and I see an orange peel on the floor. Okay, the normal response should have been pick up the orange peel and go and drop. But because I'm so stressed and easily triggered at the moment, I'll see that orange peel as a huge dump of waste. You get, and then I'll start getting angry. Why is this here? That is one of the ways stress can affect our behavior. And if you're somebody that does not manage your stress better, or you're not even aware that this is what's going on with you, people start running from you because you are always angry, you're always irritable, you're always moody. You get, whereas to you didn't know that it is the way you're responding to your own stress that is making you react in this unfriendly manner. So stress can affect our behavior. It can affect eating habits. Some people eat more when they are stressed, while those like us, we eat way less and then lose weight when we are stressed. So stress can affect your eating behavior, affect your sleep pattern. I can go on and on of how stress affects almost our existence, everything about our existence.
Yes, I was thinking, stress and depression is something we don't talk about often in Africa. And I believe that the work that you do and others, is now helping to shed light on this issue. And I'm wondering if there's any correlation between stress and depression.
Yes, there is a correlation. Stress is more like can be a trigger for depression. So depression is more is like at the extreme, at the end extreme of at the right hand of the spectrum. You get when you're stressed. So if you're not able to manage it, and now if you're not able to manage your stress, and now you're repeatedly moody, and every other behavior associated with it, you can be tilting towards the extreme of having depression in addition to every other thing that is associated to stress, including anxiety.
Okay.
So it is related. If you don't manage your stress, I think to an extent, you can be able to identify where you're moving towards that end of the spectrum and take action before it gets worse.
I often hear about people say, oh, I'm depressed, I'm depressed. I have I've said before, I had a friend that missed a flight and said, oh, I'm depressed. Can you explain the difference between depression and sadness, because sometimes we conflate these two things together.
Yes, this question is very important because a lot of people throw the word around. Any little thing, I'm depressed, I'm depressed. Depression is very, very dissimilar from stress, from sadness. Sadness is something maybe an external influence happened and then you didn't feel happy about it and then you're sad. And when the external influence is over, you feel better. So it's something that you can easily come out of without even external help. You can help yourself, as in you can feel better within a shorter period of time. Compared to depression, depression is persistent low mood for at least 2 weeks. You understand? This is depression in addition to other symptoms. So for you to say you are depressed, you must have experienced persistent low mood for at least 2 weeks. Then in addition to that, you can now be talking about lack of interest in things that used to interest you, feeling of worthlessness, loss of appetite, poor sleep, reduced energy. All these things are associated with depression, unlike sadness, where it's something that you can easily come out of and it doesn't need to get up to 2 weeks. So they are very different.
You have been conducting Stress Summit Africa for a few years now, and I was wondering, what you think is the impact of depression on Africa in our continent?
I wish I have statistics to let you know. Unfortunately, we are poor in that area. The impact of depression on Africa is that if you are depressed, you can't even function. It will be a struggle. So we should be looking at this from the point of productivity. And if one person is not productive enough in whatever capacity he or she is serving, whether you're self-employed or your government employed or someone else employed you, you can't contribute your own quota to the people you're serving. It's a minus. So the economic impact. And also to talk about the cost. Let me say you've been employed and now you're going through depression, and the time you're spending to get help is costing the company man hours, all right? Because sometimes they'll have to pay someone else to come and replace and do the job, okay? So this kind of things would impact on the economy of a nation, of a society. That's why the awareness of it is very important one, and then support and not stigmatization is very, very important. Because if people who are depressed can get adequate support, both in their workplace and from family, every kind of support, then they can work towards recovering better and also being productive despite having a mental health concern. It's just like physical health. You can't tell somebody that is having blood pressure issues not to stop working or stigmatize against the person because the person has blood pressure issues. No, the same support you give this person, it should also be the same support you're going to give someone that has a mental health concern.
Okay, you know, you were talking about that there with regards to impact of depression in Africa. You know, I just had a quick look at World Health Organization. You know, in 2009, they estimated Kenya's age standardized suicide rate to be 11 in 100,000. You know, World Health Organization again went on to say that this suicide rate is even higher in Nigeria and the Ivory Coast, with more than 15 suicides per 100,000 citizens. You know, however, like I always say, you know, Kenyan government in their suicide prevention strategy report said there is scarcity of data on suicide rate. But, you know, I want us to continue this conversation on the notion that World Health Organization's data is correct, that there is this level of suicide in Africa. And which puzzles me a lot, because when I was growing up, I'm not sure about you, but certainly when I was growing up, there was never like stories of suicide in my state or in my community. You know, it seems like the suicide rate, increase in suicide rate in Africa is almost like a new phenomenon. And I don't know what to attribute this to, because we've always had suffering, certainly me. We've always had the suffering, we've always had the mismanagement of resources, we always have, you know, this country has never been perfect. So I don't know why the suicide rate has increased. And, you know, do you have any thoughts on that? Because you speak to people all the time, you have courses and lectures, you speak to people. What's your feeling towards these statistics?
Regards to these statistics, this is what I think. I don't know the era you grew up in, whether it's the 70s, 80s, or thereabouts. Okay, great. So in that era, you would agree with me that growing up then, you had a lot of people you grew up with. Like there was this kind of community relationship. You could know everyone in your neighborhood. You guys would gather together, play football, watch movies together, that kind of thing. You share problems from the point of not from the point of competition, but from the point of this is what is going on with me. And so that support was there. People were more closely knit in their families, you get. But in this era that we are in right now, you won't find all of those. It's like we are running a more personalized race. You get, everybody's more interested in their own thing. That community sense is reduced. Family units, a lot of divorces going on right now. And when you grow up in a family where there's a dysfunctional family, let me use that. If you grow up in a dysfunctional family, the risk of having mental health concerns is more. compared to people that had that support. So I think it boils down to diminishing support compared to the time, the 80s, the 90s, the 70s. And then social media, I think social media has also contributed, because you can be in your 20s right now and then you see someone that is just 18 years making millions. And then you start wondering, what's going on with my life? Why am I not progressing? Why? As in, there are a lot of things to see that will make you question your own existence. And when you start having such negative thoughts, it can be a trigger. It can be a starting point to something worse. That's unhealthy comparison. There was something else that came to my mind when I was talking. Aside social media, family, if I remember it along the way, I'll bring it up again.
Okay, so I was saying, I always tell my Scottish friends, that most Nigerians in the UK here are under enormous stress. Because, and I'm not talking about Nigerians that are like politicians' kids or, that came with a scholarship. The working class Nigerians that came here to study and are working at the same time while they're studying, they're trying to pay their school fees every month. And they have family back home that is always calling them, can you send us some money? And there's a lot of pressure, external pressure, there's academic pressure, there's family pressure, there's so many other pressures that most of these Nigerians in the UK are facing that maybe their Scottish counterparts in the same university studying the same course are not even facing. And they are expected to achieve the same academic excellence as their peers, which is, fair enough. And I've noticed certainly in Aberdeen here, a lot of like Africans who are having like a depression or some mental health issues. Obviously I'm not a professional, but I will attribute it to this stress, these factors that I've stated now. And it's very appalling to see, not appalling, but very sad to see that this is happening. But what I wanted to ask you, do you wanted to say something with regards to that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I wanted to say something. We can only take in much. We can only cope with a certain amount. But when we are stretched, how far can we go? It's just like the rubber band. I don't know, I've talked about rubber band analogy a lot. It's just like the rubber band. When you overstretch it, it will snap. So when there is only a much we can handle. Our resilience reaches a particular threshold individually. So if you are subjected to a lot of stress from work, stress from academics, stress to have food to eat, stress from family, if you're now married, stress from marriage, stress from parenting, what do you expect? The person will break down because it will be so difficult to cope. So I'm really, really sorry that a lot of people are going through what's here. It's really sad to see.
Yeah. I know you have mentioned some of these clues in your previous answers, but I was wondering if we can delve into this a little bit more, What are the clues to identify depression? Because, sometimes people could be depressed, but they don't know, or maybe their loved one is depressed and they don't know. So what are the signs that could possibly point towards depression?
Okay, depression, first, the persistent low mood for at least 2 weeks. Then you will notice that the person is now withdrawing from social gatherings. The person doesn't want to keep up with conversations, or the person doesn't even, you are making the bed, trying to get the person to attend events. The person doesn't want to. So they're just withdrawing from anything social gathering, anything related to human beings, right? And then there's this lack of energy. Other people may interpret it as the person is lazy. That is not laziness. It's just the reduced energy. And then there is loss of interest in things that usually interest them. You see this person that used to love watching movies a lot. You get, all of a sudden, the person is no longer interested in this things. And then there is this feeling of worthlessness. They, as in the question, why am I even existing? right? Then appetite, there is loss of appetite. They have sleep issues, maybe difficulty in sleeping, or they start sleeping and they can't sustain the sleep. So they'll have to wake up intermittently because they can't sleep well. And that is also what we talk about stress. So my baby is crying right now and I can hear him loud and I'm like, oh, I have this interview, I have my baby. It's enough to subject me to stress. And because the stress hormones are trying to get me to do something or to take care of the situation, I'm losing concentration, I'm losing focus. And if you were my boss, I may make mistakes and you'll be like, oh, this lady is not serious. These serious presentations and you're making mistakes. Stress can cost you your job.
By the way, I will be a considerate boss because I will speak to you to see if there's any issues that we can resolve.
Thank you for being an understanding boss.
You know, I watched a lot of your videos, you know, because, you know, I learned a lot from watching your videos. And you once, in one of your videos, I don't know if you remember this, you know, you did a video about five things you should never say to a depressed person. You know, I wonder if you can elaborate on this a little bit. Not verbatim,
yes.
But yeah, if you can remember some of this.
Yes. Five things you should never say to a depressed person. Number one, don't tell someone that is depressed, you are not depressed. You don't say that because it's more like you're undermining what the person is actually feeling. You understand? And then the second thing is you don't just tell the person, hey, is a normal thing. Depression is not normal. That everyone is throwing the word around does not mean it's a normal thing. The person needs help and urgent help. That reminds me, the other symptom I said I forgot was suicidal ideation. When you see somebody that is now talking about taking his or her life, don't let that person be until he or she gets help urgently. Now, the third thing is that you don't tell the person, snap out of it. You're doing too much. You can't. if anybody is listening to us and has heard all we have explained about how deep and how dark depression can be, you will know that it's not something that somebody just come out of, hey, I'm no longer depressed. No. The person needs help. Lack of energy, they are withdrawing from people that they don't even have energy to surmount the situation and help themselves. So they need external influence, they need direction, they need guidance, they need therapy to help them come out of the situation. All right. And now you don't tell the person, hey, you're just lazy, you're seeking attention. This is someone that has low energy, which is one of the symptoms of depression. They are not being lazy. It's just how they feel, okay? And then finally, don't tell the person, it's not a time to start comparing the person's situation to your own situation and start saying things like, hey, I've been through worse situations. What's going on with you? You know, you don't undermine people's feelings because one thing is this, we have different thresholds in coping with situations. If both of us are faced with the same pressure, let me say we are working in the same place and we are faced by the same boss, the same workload, how you will cope will be different from how I cope because a lot of things surround how each person copes. So if I now come out and tell you, hey, this work is stressing me out, the best you can do for me is to listen. And not to compare or tell me things like, it's not the same work we are doing. I better come off it. No, you don't undermine what I'm telling you. Because what I'm telling you can become a serious issue that will make me go into depression or start having anxiety issues. So first of all, listen to me. Try to put yourself in my shoes. Try to understand my own circumstance. Maybe you have better family support than me. maybe your health is stronger than me, and I don't have enough. I'm not healthy enough to cope. You understand? So these things buttress the point that we respond in different ways, even to the same degree of stressors. So you don't tell someone that is going through depression, my own is worse. No, you don't do that. Listen first and see if they need help.
Yeah, you know, I often equate suicide or suicide thoughts to mental health issue, but you know, now I'm thinking, you know, what role does stress play in this, if any? You know, is it almost like a point of no return? And how does stress factor into this point now?
Yes. If you are repeatedly stressed, or you have various sources of stress and you're not able to cope, remember we talked about a spectrum. And when you go to the end of the spectrum, you will now start experiencing worse situations, of which depression and anxiety can be there, burnout can be there, anything can be there. All right? And then depression is a major risk of suicide. So if you can start by coping with your stress or finding ways to cope with your stress initially, if you were meant to get depressed, within the month, based on all that is going on for you, but because you're able to identify that something is wrong, I need to do something about it, it will, to an extent, go a long way in helping you prevent yourself from getting to that end of the spectrum. So yes, stress is related.
Yeah, I was wondering, you know, from your studies and practice, whether you've encountered any link between stress and diseases.
Yes. There are several studies out there that link stress to diseases. However, most of them, or rather the one, all that I've come in contact with, didn't mention that stress causes these diseases directly, but indirectly. Okay? So if someone has a pre-existing health condition, that's when you can say stress is worsening the condition. Like blood pressure being more difficult to manage, diabetes more difficult to manage, worsening ulcers, stomach ulcers. Stress can contribute to stroke. Not that it's causing stroke. All right? It can also contribute to heart attack, not directly as well. Okay, and then other ways that stress can contribute to health conditions is how people are coping or how people are managing their stress. If someone is using cigarette smoking to cope with the stress, of course there are so many diseases associated with increased smoking, including cancers. All right, so this is now stress indirectly contributing to these. The same with alcohol intake. So people are using alcohol to cope. So increased alcohol intake is associated with certain health conditions, including liver diseases. Okay? And then other things like when you're not sleeping well as a result of stress, poor sleep has been linked to cardiovascular disease, that's heart conditions, right? And also, poor sleep has been linked to memory issues, including a disease called Alzheimer's. It's a memory issue, memory loss. And then again, the way we eat. I'm sure you must have heard that food is medicine. So if someone is undergoing stress and in the process is now overeating, the person is at risk of obesity. I have a friend who became really obese through this way. Again, she was using comfort eating, emotional eating to cope with her mom's loss. And before you know it, she was already overweight and obese. She was already obese, not just overweight. Until she identified the root cause of why she was eating that way, that was when she started helping herself. So stress has been linked to a lot of diseases. And then there are studies that shows that stress contributes to, is it 75% of primary care attendance? So most people that come to primary care health to see the GP is coming due to stress-related issue, which can be a physical health issue, a mental health issue. There are studies out there that suggest that.
You know, I am very much interested in parenting stress. You know, a survey of 2,000 parents conducted by ChannelMom.com and The Baby Show in 2019 showed that a fifth of parents break up within a year of having a baby. You know, the common reasons cited were constant arguments, lack of communication, dwindled sex life. The surprising thing, however, for me, is that stress was not cited as a common factor in the destruction of this relationship. So I'm just wondering what role stress plays in parenting, you know, especially new parents, in how their parent, you know, how they manage the stress of having a baby, which is, you know, you are in the same position now. So you are.
You know, as you have mentioned, you know, those things, communication, dwindling sex, all I was just thinking about is all these things, most of them are stress-related. So they don't even need to mention stress, like separate it as an entity. At the bedrock of all of these, we have stress. If they researched more, or if they considered that, stress can cause low libido. It's an established fact. So if a new parent, for instance, when my little baby came, that's the one that is 4 months right now that I'm carrying, it was a tough period. In as much as I already had experience in parenting, but this was different. I have a toddler and now a new baby. So it was different and I was just learning how to cope. So in such situation, sex would be one of the least things I can think about. Do you understand? And in such level of stress, libido won't be there. I know of, apart from what studies I've seen people who, due to work-related stress, are unable to sustain erection. This is a man. All right. So if it's somebody like that, then you come home, you're unable to sustain erection, your partner is worried, like, what's going on here? Is he thinking of someone else? Is he having an external affair? Before you know it, there will be miscommunication. In the sense that this guy that is being stressed at work is not communicating with the wife what's going on so that she can understand. Whereas the wife is making assumptions which she's not communicating. And before you know it, tension is building up. So if anything happens or there is any atom of suspicion elsewhere, each party will blow it out of proportion. And before you know it, people are talking about we have issues in marriage, we can't agree on certain things. How did it start? That's the question. So at the bedrock of all of these, stress is there in most situations.
Okay.
The arguments. Yeah, when you talk about having arguments in homes, sometimes if you're stressed, you're irritable. So even that your lovely spouse, you won't be seeing the person as so lovely. You'll just be seeing the person as a source of anger for you. Most times it's not their fault, but rather it is you that needs to manage what's going on in your life so that you'll be happy. And people are more attracted to happy people. But if you are always moody because you have stress, you're parenting your kids, you don't know how to cope, you don't have help, you don't know how to delegate, you don't know how to do this or that, and now you're always moody, you're always angry, your spouse will be withdrawing from you because they will feel that they are the ones causing you problems. And when they are withdrawing, you too will start having other thoughts, like, why are they not being supportive? Why are they withdrawing? Which will further fuel the issue. So this happens mainly in the first year of marriage, where people are trying to adjust to the new change, whether it's the new change of now living with someone or whether it's the new change of now of welcoming a child.
Okay. Dr. Nnamdi Lewis, you know, I have to say I've been very lucky that, you know, I've not been someone that is always down with stress or depression. You know, I've experienced a lot of difficult moments in my life, but I've always been a glass half full type of person. I always managed to motivate myself, always managed to get myself up and keep moving. So, but that brings me to the question of, you know, resilience. You know, why do some people have more resilience or higher tolerance for stress than others? Because, you know, like I said about me, you know, I don't think I'm anything special. So why is this differences there?
Okay, there are several factors. One of them is health. If you have poor health, you won't be able to cope as much as someone that has great health. And then the second thing is support. For instance, there was a time a part of a market in Nigeria burnt down. So you realize that a lot of people, to them, it was the end of the world. Whereas some people bounced back better. Why is this? Because of support. So if you are the kind of person that has no support, no backup, no place, no shoulder to lean on and cry, no extra source of income, nothing at all, it will be more difficult for you to cope with stressful situations compared to when, okay, at least you have a family, you can get back to, everybody can rally around to support you. There is a backup plan, there is a second option, there is an alternative. It will be easier for you to cope if you are aware of all of this. And then growing up, how you grew up. If you grew up in an environment where everyone is usually happy, of course, things happen, but they have a better view of life, all right? They tend to see the best parts of life. And then they've also transferred those values into you. It will be easier for you to cope better compared to someone that has been told words like you're useless, things will never move well for you. And then the person have seen it also being said to other people around. That's just the environment they grew up in. If any little thing happens, they'll have a flashback. Hey, it was actually said about me. It's happening. You get, and before you know it, the person is feeling worse and terrible about his or her life. So it will be more difficult for the person to get back to his or her feet, right? And then genetics. There are studies that have shown that there are genetic factors that can contribute to how we respond to situations. So all these things contribute. Environmental factor, genetics, support, family, a lot.
And, you know, watching most women, you know, juggle like multiple roles, and certainly watching you, you know, juggling and trying to manage the kids and say conducting the interview with me and still articulating. So that brings me to the question of whether there are any gender differences on how we manage stress. Does women manage stress more than men or vice versa?
This is actually one of topics of discussion during one of the stress management summit panel session. And you know the interesting thing, we didn't arrive at a conclusion because everyone wanted to prove that they are more stressed than the other. So I would say that stress management is individualized, irrespective of gender, although there are studies out there to either be for or against. I'm not really interested in that. I'm more interested in you as an individual, all right? How are you coping? Although one thing that is common is that I've noticed that men don't seek help as much as women do. And if you are the one that seeks help faster, it's easier for you to cope because you definitely get support. So for men that don't seek support, in addition to this notion that men shouldn't cry, man up, you know, words like that. You see a man that is dying, the person would prefer to die finish rather than find help, you know. So I don't know how to help you guys in that regard. I think you should help yourselves. Yeah.
Okay, so, you know, in terms of work, you know, I always talk about the work-life balance and, you know, maybe international students here as well, working all the time to cope. How are ways that we can consistently work at peak performance without breaking down? Is there any tips that you can give working professionals out there on how to maintain that consistency, working at peak performance without breaking down due to stress or other factors?
Yes, there are several tips, but I'll highlight the ones that come to mind and are really important. Number one, you have to be self-aware. That is very important. Self-aware means, what are your triggers? How much can you handle per time? How do you recognize that you're stressed and you need rest? So how you need to be self-aware enough to know, okay, I've reached my limit. If I continue like this persistently, I may burn out. And once you've experienced burnout, it will be difficult for you to come back to your productive self. Burnout is not something I wish for anybody. I've been there. It's terrible. And then you should schedule your rest. We see people, we always scheduling activities, scheduling this. How about your rest? Can you bring out a day where you say, okay, no work today, I just need to rest. I just need to focus on anything that is outside work. I just want to spend time with families. I want to play Ludo and enjoy hobbies. And in addition to that, during your work each day, are you able to incorporate timeouts, like time when, like even if it's 5 minutes, you stretch, relax your shoulder? Because one thing you notice is that when there is a way you keep working and you don't remember that your shoulder has been tensed all along. You can check.
Okay.
Yeah, so, no, you can check.
Like I can check your shoulder to see.
Yeah, you can check if your shoulder is relaxed.
Okay, yes.
Yeah. Great. So all these little things, okay? Scheduling your rest, being self-aware, and then trying to surround yourself with positive people that add to your mental wellness bank and not people that subtract. Very important, whether it's the environment you're in or the people around you, and then it will sleep well. Sleep well. This is not the time where you say, hey, I need to sleep 2 hours to be highly productive. No, sleep is part of productivity, but it's not oversleeping. So I'm not talking to lazy people. I'm actually talking to hardworking people.
Yeah, and I would like to add, you know, exercise to that as well, because I find exercise to be very helpful to me, because, you know, while I'm doing this podcast, which is almost like a full-time job, I also have my full-time job. So sometimes people ask me, you know, how do you manage all these things? And I find that exercise, you know, I try to exercise, you know, most mornings before I start my day. It helps me a lot to, like, get on with what I need to do and start doing it without being too much stress. So exercise helps as well.
Yes.
So just to end, I have my last question, because I know I'm keeping an eye on the time for you. So this is my last question. You know, you recently finished Stress Summit Africa, and I'm assuming there will be another Stress Summit next year. Mm-hmm. Right? So can you talk about this summit? You know, why did you start this Stress Summit Africa, and what does it entail, and what do you hope to achieve with it?
Okay, Stress Management Summit Africa is an annual event that started in 2020 at the peak of COVID, April 2020. So it was at a time when I wasn't at work. I was home then, and I saw how my colleagues were at the forefront helping people. And I was like, what can I do? How can I contribute to my own quota? I was already doing the stress management thing, helping people, teaching and all of that, but I wanted to do more. So the idea came, why not host a summit, bring professionals across the world and help people. I just shared the idea with my mentor. Let me say this happened on the 3rd of April. The idea just came and I had a meeting with my mentor. I told her, this is what I want to do. Immediately, she made me to start working, like start doing things to make sure that this event comes to pass. Put a date. I had to put a date and I just had 21 days to put up the flyer, write to people, invite people to speak. It was a lot because I did all of this myself without a team then, although it's now better now. And it was a success. We reached about 250 people. Then it wasn't Stress Management Summit Africa. It became Stress Management Summit Africa in the second event. In the second event, I was like, in the first event, we had, I think he's Scottish or Canadian, I don't remember exactly, who spoke at the first event. I was like, why go out there to look for people when we have resourceful hands amongst us? And there are a lot of mental health activities in the Western world compared to Africa. So why not focus on Africa? And that's how the idea came. Let's do it for Africa by Africans. Okay? That's how we now narrowed it down to Stress Management Summit Africa. And the goal is to increase awareness of the dangers of stress and how to manage it across Africa. And we aim to reach about 1 million people by 2040. All right, so this is what we do, and we are also looking forward to hosting another one April next year to reach more people. It's been amazing. It's really been amazing. The feedback has been worth it every year. It's been really amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, honestly, I would say that we really, really need it. Like I said, you know, in most African countries, certainly Nigeria is one of the most stressful countries to live in. Even to start to go home, if I want to go home to Nigeria, I'm already planning how is my movement going to be from A to B, yeah. You know? So
I see.
So what you're doing is very good, you know, for people to become aware of stress, to become aware of how to manage stress. So that's really good. And I just wanted to know if there anything else you would like to add, because we've come to the end of the podcast.
I must say thank you. Thank you for this opportunity to share a lot within a short period of time. Yeah, and to everyone out there, be intentional in managing your stress. If you're aiming for a healthier life, more impactful life, more productive life, you should know how to manage your stress. Make it a priority. I know you're chasing the money, but you need help to chase money, and you need help to enjoy the money. So make it a priority as well.
Okay.
Thank you.
We'll end on that note. Dr. Ezine Nnamdi Lewis, thank you very much for coming on the show. Thank you.
It's all right. Thank you.
Subscribe to our YouTube channel, The Pan-African Experience. Join us on Facebook at The Pan-African Experience. Follow us on Twitter, TPA Experience. And follow us on Instagram, The Pan-African Experience. Visit our website at www.thepanafricanexperience.com.